I'm going to open up the Senate Education Committee. Welcome, everyone. We have a long list of bills to do today, and starting off with Senate Bill 909. We're honored to have the governor here. Let's start off with a short summary, Administrator Lindholm.
Originally, Senate Bill 909 established a task force on Education Investment Board. However, we have a dash 3 amendment that inserts appropriating money in the relating clause. It deletes all sections of the original Senate Bill 909 and establishes the Oregon Education Investment Board for the purpose of overseeing a unified public education system. Defines the board membership, governance, and duties. Establishes the Early Learning Council, K through 12 Education Coordinating Council, and the Higher Education Coordinating Council. Establishes the Oregon Education Investment Fund and the State Treasury. Outlines the purposes of the Early Learning Council, the K through 12 Council, and the Higher Education Coordinating Council. However, if and when Senate Bill 242 becomes law, Section 6 on the Higher Education Council is repealed. Requires the board to submit a report to the interim legislative committees on education. The board may also file proposed legislative measures to allow the board to carry out duties, merge, or redesign certain programs and or services funded or administered by the State Commission on Children and Families, Department of Education, Oregon Health Authority, State Library, Department of Human Services, and the Employment Department. Allows the board to establish programs to accomplish the board goals. Merges the state boards of education and higher education and transfers the duties of the boards and the State Commission on Children and Families to the board by June 30, 2012. Requires the Superintendent of Public Education, Commissioner for Community College Services, Chancellor of the Oregon University System, and the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to report to the Chief Education Officer of the Board. Ensures a statewide data system is established and operating by January 1st, 2012.
Well, housekeeping measure. We are in public hearing on Senate Bill 909. Governor John Kitzhaber.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Kitzhaber, Governor of the State of Oregon. I appreciate very much your invitation to appear here today, and I also would like to congratulate this committee on the good works that you have done to date, in particular Senate Bill 242, which to me is an integral part of this larger education transformation effort that that we're undertaking. And I certainly want to do all I can to make sure that bill gets to my desk for my signature. I'd like to offer my support for Senate Bill 909, which essentially is the first and integral step in creating a transparent, unified 0 through 20 education investment budget. The reason for this bill is that our current education funding and governance system, in my estimation, is severely broken, and a new approach, a new direction is required to produce better results for students, more resources for teachers, and more value for taxpayers. As you know, the education debate qualitatively in this building hasn't changed much since I was a freshman in the House. It's generally about a large number for one part of the education continuum. We know today that far too many children arrive at school without the ability to fully participate in the learning environment because of a set of risk factors that they experience in early childhood. We spend over $1 billion a biennium on programs for kids 0 through 5, and we simply aren't getting the outcomes we need by the time that they get to school. We know that 1 out of 4 high school graduates, only 1 out of 4, is college ready, and 20% of our community college budget is spent on remediation. At the same time, we recognize that most of the jobs that will be available for Oregonians in the next decade will require at least a technical certificate or an associate's degree. So without fundamentally changing our approach to education funding and governance, it will be impossible, in my estimation, to achieve our long-term objectives of ensuring that every high school graduate is college ready, that 40% of our high school graduates get at least 2 years of post-secondary education, and at least 40% get a baccalaureate degree or higher. I also want to say just briefly at the beginning here that the passage of this bill, this restructuring or transformation effort for budgeting and governance in no means is a substitute for a serious discussion about adequately funding our educational system. I think education, public education in Oregon is underfunded at all levels, from early childhood to post-secondary education, and we do need to address that. But when we make that investment, the future investments in our educational system, we need to invest in a system designed for the 21st century, not one designed for the past. The budgets of early childhood budgets, K-12, community colleges, and higher ed, are viewed not as part of a common interdependent continuum, but as fragmented, separate, competing entities that move by themselves through the legislative budget process. Whereas, you know, funding is based largely on enrollment, which means that the fiscal health of our school districts, our colleges, and our universities, to a large extent, depends on the number of students enrolled rather than on how well those students are served. This bill, Senate Bill 909, begins to move us in a fundamentally different direction by recognizing the fact that early childhood success is the foundation for the educational, economic, and health success of all Oregonians. And by consolidating half a dozen state agencies and dozens of programs within the Early Learning Council, we'll have the ability to actually identify at-risk kids earlier, get them the services they need more efficiently, integrate early childhood services with the K-12 system, and measure outcomes to make sure that all of our kids are ready to learn when they get to kindergarten, ready to read when they get to the first grade, and reading when they leave the first grade. That objective alone would have a profound impact on the K-12 system, but also on our post-secondary system as well. We need to recognize that the state's function here needs to move from that of a funder to that of an investor. And those investments need to produce a robust outcome that's based on outcomes rather than simply seat time. Also, moving away from enrollment-based funding gives us unprecedented opportunities for flexibility to allow us to invest in key parts of the continuum where we can leverage the greatest results, particularly in the early childhood area and in 11 through 14. It gives our students the ability to move seamlessly from our primary and secondary system into post-secondary education or into the workforce. I know we have many people here to testify. Let me simply conclude my remarks by quoting from an op-ed piece that was recently put in the Oregonian by a number of school superintendents. And they said that it should not be hard to let go of the status quo, limping from funding crisis to funding crisis with a system that increasingly cannot deliver for students, bleeds resources away from teachers, and provides diminishing return for taxpayers. We have the opportunity today to begin to change our course for decades to come, developing a system that gives better outcomes for students, more resources for teachers, and a more prosperous future for Oregonians. Thank you very much for the opportunity to appear here. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Governor. And you have your K-20 team that's been meeting. We'll have a report in May.
Yes. The Education Investment Team, which we created by executive order.
Right. And what happens to that report, and where do we pick that up again?
The Education Investment Team was created in essentially in lieu of the Oregon Education Investment Board, which had not yet been to the delivery room, Doctor. So we will transfer that, the ongoing work, to the Oregon Education Investment Board. We did want to provide an interim report to the legislature, however, on the progress we're making on developing a sort of a model student-centered budget. So that would be sort of a benchmark for you along the way. I believe under the legislation, the report on the design of the entire system has to be ready by December. And I will just add that we have received commitments at this point for $125,000 from the private sector to help us with do that design work during the interim.
Okay. Questions of the governor? Senator George?
Governor, thank you very much for coming and your efforts on education. I sort of asked around a little bit about what people thought about this from different groups in the education reform arena. And their concern is that when you consolidate power, it might take away from a lot of the innovative education reforms going on around the country right now that have actually pushed more power out to the parents and to the teachers. So that rather than their argument is that rather than centralizing control or centralizing an oversight board, what we ought to do is push control of education out to the school parents. How would this interact with education reforms that we're looking at from states like Florida and other places, where there's innovative approaches that may not fit in with a consolidation model, but rather a disbursement model of education reform? How do you see these things either being in conflict or working together?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, I think they actually would complement one another. One of the problems we have today is that the state really is, particularly with our primary and secondary system, a passive funder. We write a check and send it out to the school districts. It seems to me that the state needs to be an active partner in achieving our educational objectives, and that means trying to help identify, encourage and identify the innovation that's going on throughout the system to ensure that that innovation is disseminated throughout the districts to try to learn from those experimentations, if you will, those innovative approaches at the local level. This is not designed to in any way inhibit innovation. It's designed to do two things. One, to encourage and disseminate it as a system, and secondly, to really consolidate the budgeting process so that we begin to recognize that, particularly if we have limited resources, there are places you can spend those dollars on the continuum that'll give you a much larger bang for your buck than others. And right now, we really have sort of a one-size-fits-all system. I think we're trying to get one that is much more strategic and is actually supportive of the innovation and work being done at the district level and school and the building level.
Other questions?
Thanks.
Governor, you have what looks like a who's who of education here in this room in support of this measure, and it speaks well of you and this measure. So thank you for your leadership.
Thank you.
Okay. I would call up Dr. Nancy Golden, Mary Spield, Lynn Saxton, and Representative Comp next. Senator Johnson, are you interested in this bill to the extent that you want to testify?
Mr. Chair, I don't want to testify on this bill. I'm here for another bill much farther down your agenda, but I'm staying listening to the discussion.
Thank you.
Chairperson Hass, member of the committee. For the record, I am Nancy Golden. I'm the education advisor to the governor. I was prepared to do an overview, but I think you've already gotten that. So do know if there's any questions about the bill, I'm prepared to answer them. I also did submit in writing a testimony just about my support of the bill. So I think you're receiving that right now. So let me just see if there's any additional questions before I introduce the transition team members.
Go ahead and introduce them.
Okay. So I think, as you all know, as soon as the governor was elected, he had a transition teams in early learning, and Lynn Saxton was one of the co-chairs for the early learning team and the K-12 team, and I'm one of the co-chairs for the K-12 team. I wouldn't be handling this. Rob Saxton would, except he is out of the country, so I'm the person who's going to talk about that. And then Mary Spilde, who is the president of Lane Community College, was one of the co-chairs of the higher ed team along with Duncan Wise. So we'd like to share with you a little bit of the recommendation from the transition team, and we'll start with early learning and go to K-12 and then go on to higher ed.
Great. Thank you, Chair and Senators. It's a privilege to be here with you today, and I'm particularly excited to talk to you about the opportunity to bring forward solutions for the early childhood continuum in Oregon. We have created a proposal, and we have a design team actively working until 8:30 last night in Salem, as a matter of fact, to put all the details on that design. But the things that I think are most important for you to know about our efforts is we have a simple but elegant goal, and that goal is to be sure that children ages 0 through 5 enter first grade ready to read and leave first grade reading. And that is a goal that will be difficult to achieve in the current environment, where about 40% of families in Oregon, and there should be an audible gasp over that number, require some level of government support in order for them to get their child to first grade ready to read. What we are proposing is a new standard where you should be able to expect a return on your investment, and those children will, through the design team's work and work put in motion by the transition team, be ready to read when they enter first grade. That requires integration of services from the healthcare system, the education system, the social service system, and the community and family systems. Our proposal is first and foremost focused on families and making access for them to services and supports to ensure the educational goals are met, readily available in an environment where they are comfortable and feel that they are welcome and supported. We've introduced a couple things that are, I think, critical in this in our proposal. One is we've supported outcomes measurement. As one of my board members told me, if you don't measure it, you can't get it. We're not going to be able to attain the goals that we've outlined unless we're able to document the outcomes that providers are offering in the community. Secondly, we've included performance-based contracting, which is allows the state to use its money most effectively so that if the outcomes are not attained, the contract is not continued. Thirdly, we're very interested in tracking children and families across jurisdictional lines, across service systems. It's time in Oregon that we embrace the most progressive practices in the country, which are to focus on the family and the children's needs as opposed to silos of care. And so this effort will be designed to make resources available to families that they need. It's a voluntary access program, but they will get those services based on their needs, and the providers will be responsible for creating those services based on client outcomes as opposed to program and service outcomes. The key detail of that is important for our consideration as Oregonians is that with our current dropout rate at the high school level and a 40% rate of need for government services in the 0 to 5 continuum, we will be unable to compete in a global economy if we are not successful in this first step. So we will bring you a product July 1 that reflects a design that will ensure that Oregon's children ages 0 to 5 arrive in first grade ready to read, and that the K through 12 system can further deliver the goal of an educated workforce.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, so now I'll talk a little bit about the K-12 continuum. And we all began with outcomes, and we feel strongly if students come to kindergarten with the skills to be successful.
Make sure you re-identify yourself.
Oh, yes. I'm Nancy Golden, the educational policy for the governor and the K-12, one of the K-12 chairs of the committee, the transition committee. So, Senator Hass and members of the committee, what we believe is if students come to school with the skills to be successful and in kindergarten, then we can get them reading at grade level by first grade. We could be closing the achievement gap. They'll be career and college ready, and they'll graduate high school without need for remediation. So we had some recommendations to start working on, start designing to ensure that this would happen. One recommendation is the seamless transition between grade 9 and grade 14. In addition to that, we think proficiency-based education is key so students can move according to what they know and are able to do as opposed to grade levels. We think it's critical that we work towards having effective teachers, effective leaders, and a strong evaluation system for all of our educators. We believe it's important to increase virtual education and to increase the integration of technology into the regular classroom. We also want to look at reduction in mandates, such as special education mandates, alternative approaches to testing that don't require quite as much paperwork, increase access to proven innovative models, and eventually take a look at open enrollment to provide opportunities for our students. We also spent time on thinking about efficiencies. What are the efficiencies we can create in the system to ensure we have the resources to put towards the practices we need to ensure our students will move along the continuum? Some of those efficiencies are to reduce transportation costs, ESD consolidation, eventually looking at district consolidation, looking at closure of underutilized school buildings, looking at practices like business efficiencies, just-in-time, and lean manufacturing, the reduction of paperwork. So that's the key recommendations coming out of the K-12 committee.
Senator House and members of the committee, I'm Mary Spilde. I'm president of Lane Community College in Eugene and served as co-chair of the governor's post-secondary transition team, and I'm currently serving as a member of the governor's investment team. And the work of the transition team on post-secondary education focused on how to achieve the greatest results for students with current levels of funding. So trying to ensure student success, progression and completion of certificates and 2 and 4 year degrees, guaranteeing access to undergraduate education and transfer to universities, connecting high school to college and making sure that students are ready for college level work, serving the needs of low income and rural Oregonians and people of color, and making sure that there was access to degrees and certificates that lead to high-demand Oregon jobs. And all of this with the overall goal of reaching the 40-40-20 goal. So we recommended a number of redesigns, including looking at grades 11 to 14, looking at the intersection of transfer for community college students to the universities, looking at developmental education, which, as the governor said, we spend quite a bit of community college resource on getting students ready for college-level work. We made recommendations around online learning and efficiency and productivity. But the more we looked at the results we need as a state, the more obvious the disconnects became, and the more evident it became that education 0 to 20 is inextricably linked. And we realized that to ensure results for Oregonians in the future, we must engage in redesign of the system. We must stop viewing education as a set of unconnected systems and begin the work of building a better functioning system that is seamless for the students who are progressing through it. Community colleges are deeply connected all along the continuum from early learning to the university system. We're deeply connected to K-12 through our collaboration on College Now courses, career pathways, academic catch-up. And we're connected to the universities because so many of our students start at the community college and transfer to the university. And we want to make sure that every credit counts, no rework, no do-overs. So given our unique intersection with K-12 and the universities, we believe it's really critical that we view education 0 to 20 as a system. And if we don't, we set up unnecessary barriers for our students. So the governor's vision to establish an Oregon Investment Board and a unified 0 to 20 budget and investing in outcomes is an idea that we support. We see the need for a set of state outcomes that are locally governed community colleges can contribute to, as well as serving our local districts. It's very clear that the problems we are facing are urgent, and we must take action to rebuild the system. And we believe that the governor's vision is a vital first step in the right direction. We understand that there are a number of issues yet to be determined, such as governance of the university system and where community colleges fit in the overall scheme of things, and we certainly look forward to participating in these discussions with the governor and with you as legislators. But we want to underscore that we believe that the results we were seeking in the transition team, that the big idea of an investment board, a unified budget, and budgeting to outcomes is a very, very critical first step. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for our panel? Comments? Senator Bonamici?
Well, I'm pondering, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
It's a lot to bite off.
It is.
Senator George?
I guess I'd like this panel to kind of answer the same question I asked the governor, which is, I think the concern always is, and I appreciate the staff coming by and visiting with me about the bill, the concern always is whether or not this is a coordination council that is helping facilitate change and innovation, or whether it becomes a dominant controlling council where it basically is sitting dictates down to everyone and everyone is following the rules, which I think basically puts a wet towel on innovation and creativity. Mm-hmm. So I need some encouragement that what this is a coordinating council that is basically going to try to find ways that we can find innovations in our schools and not necessarily become a top-down structure that basically crushes innovation.
So from the early childhood team, we absolutely do not want to crush innovation. We have lots of great services around the state of Oregon right now in the early childhood continuum, whether it's the relief nurseries, some of the micro programs that have developed in areas all over in response to family needs. We don't want to do that. However, those services right now are not integrated with either data or goal setting to achieve the desires and the needs of the education system. So we're doing a lot of good work. We're spending about $380 million a year. But at the finish line, we can't identify why we're not getting across the finish line successfully. So our goal is certainly not to be top-down, heavy-handed, et cetera, but it's also so and to let innovation thrive, provided that we can track results, return on investment. It's a good concept in the private sector. It's a great concept in the public sector. And so that we can also be sure that we're not wasting state dollars by having kids have to go through steps multiple times to cross the finish line successfully and go into the workplace. So I think ideally there's the marketplace of ideas flourishes under this with a set of parameters that are clear and crisp. Entering first grade ready to read, leaving first grade reading. We actually provide an investment kind of range in our report. And we require that data to be accumulated and a system to do that so that we know after we make this investment in a certain number of years, we can take that 40% and reduce it significantly. That number should be, and when we look nationally at all the data, that number should be in the range of 15%. Part of that is because of our economy. That's no surprise to you, Senator. So my answer would be absolutely not. We want innovation, and particularly innovation that produces results, to thrive and flourish.
Senator House, Senator George, from a community college perspective, I think you know that we are locally governed institutions. I think you may have heard from us before on this point. And we're very protective of our local governance because we believe it works for Oregon, it works for students, and it does engender lots of innovation. And I think community colleges in Oregon have shown that. So we would not be interested in a top-down board, but we do see the investment board differently. We see the need for a set of high-level outcomes and investments to support those outcomes and then allowing us to do our innovative job of meeting those outcomes, and very happy to be assessed on our ability to achieve those outcomes. So we think that having a group of people look across the 0 to 20 continuum, which we believe is particularly important for community colleges because we're so immersed in all parts of the continuum from early learning, K-12, and the university and post-secondary system. So we think that this board will help look at the whole system and connect the dots for everyone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I'll probably address this question to Dr. Golden because we spoke about this a bit yesterday. In the testimony, when there's a discussion about the outcome-based budget proposing strategic investments across the system and maximizing returns on state investments, I'm trying to put the kids in the middle of that. And I know this is something that the investment board will be working on. But can you talk a little bit about what you envision in terms of identifying those outcomes? I'm a bit concerned that when test scores get into the outcomes, that then we have differences across districts and differences, of course, in the children who are attending those schools. So could you talk a little bit about what you have envisioned for what these outcomes will be and how they'll be measured?
Sure. Senator Haas, Senator Bonamici, I'd be happy to answer that question. And I appreciated the conversation yesterday because this is really about children. But when we talk about investments, sometimes it doesn't feel like we're talking about children. Right. So if we just use an example of by the end of first grade, all children are reading, What we need to know is to be able to quickly assess all of the children and where they are at the moment they leave kindergarten and come to first grade. Now, the hope is they're ready to read. But then what we need to do is have a system in place that quickly decides, is a child already at grade level and can be stretched beyond? Is a child on track? Do they need strategic intervention or intensive intervention? And we have to create systems in our school districts that allow us to provide the interventions quickly, immediately, so we can get all the children back on track. So it's very focused on students' individual levels, but what it does say is that we're accountable to the outcomes, and I think it really goes along with Senator George's questions. Not only are we accountable at the local level, using best practices and making sure we look at the research-based programs, that we immediately implement what we need to do to keep our students on the pathway to success.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator Shields.
Thank you, Chair Hess. This discussion has, and particularly as I see Dr. Prince-Center in the background, reminded me that of the need for high-quality research funded by the legislature in to keep track of these outcomes. We expect a lot of the executive branch. We never fund any of the research that we tell them to go do and tell them to come back with a three-year longitudinal outcome study in 6 months. I just wanted to underline that some states have invested thoroughly in research. The Washington State Institute for Public Policy has an entire menu of research that they've funded on higher education, alternative routes to teacher certification, student financial aid programs, etc. And it's something that I've been meaning to work on with the OUS system more closely, haven't. So I thought I would use this as an opportunity to underline that as a possible way to get at some of those research outcomes in a way that will have a whole lot of validity.
Thank you. Well, thank you to you three.
Thank you.
We do have a lot of people we need to hear from today, and including a couple more panels from the governor's network, if you will. So I want to just urge everyone to condense their comments. Don't read from your written testimony. And we'll try to get through everyone, but at 2:15 we have to move to other business. So, Representative Comp, thank you for coming.
Did you want anybody else at this time?
Why don't you do your presentation, then we'll go on to the next panel.
Thank you, Chair Hess, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Representative Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22, which includes the city of Salem, Jervis, Brooks, as well as Northeast Salem. You are getting a copy of my testimony, so I will not read it, but what I would share is my enthusiastic support of the governor's proposal, Senate Bill 909. I think it is key that we begin this process now. Last week, it was my honor to serve our state at a national conference in North Carolina called Making the Grade, preparing today's students for tomorrow's economy. And what I observed in the 2 days that I was there, it was intense, a lot of sessions, is the fact that Oregon, not just our children are behind, Oregon is behind. We do not have systems in place that other states have in place to see what their students are learning. This is an essential component of what the governor's proposing is actual outcomes, not just saying that a student attends school for an hour or two, but what are they learning? And some of these systems are in place. They have statistical evidence in a number of states that share what their students are learning. When you sit in a presentation and you're seeing real hard data that tells us exactly what these states are doing, it was humbling to the fact that we have not moved near as far or as fast as a lot of our states in the nation. And what I would share is that my closing here, real briefly, is we need to address the problem that we have in education, not as just a components. We always feel like we're just taking bites of the cookie, but we need to look at the whole system. Members, this bill is about a shared responsibility to achieve a highly effective education community in this state. It's for our students, it's for our employees, it's for our employers. The viability of our state rests in the responsibility of our hands, and I think it is urgent that we move forward with Senate Bill 909 and support Governor Kitzhaber. And thank you, and if you had any questions or want a dissertation on next steps, I'd be happy to share that with you.
Questions? Thank you, Representative Connelly.
Thank you for your time.
All right. I have some panels here that are ready to go. Sandy Huss, Priscilla Forbes, Sue Hildick, and Tom Cole from the investment team.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. I'm Sandy Husk. I'm the superintendent of the Salem-Keizer Public School District. I'm also a member of the Oregon Education Investment Team. I'm also a member of COSA and the Superintendent's Education Vision Policy Group. And all of those groups align with the support for this particular measure that we're about to go into. I have 3 points. One is the harsh reality of the budgets that we're going to be balancing this spring. As was mentioned earlier, we know we have a revenue shortfall. We know it's going to be very difficult. We will make that work. We will be downsizing our organizations, but we won't lose sight of the ultimate goal of putting in place more systems in the state to mirror some of the successes we're having in the district. The second point is to focus more on the dream of what could be. When I come to a school district, as I did here in Salem, one of the first things you do is ask people, what's going well, what's not going well? If we were to look at ourselves 2 years down the road and give ourselves a better score, what would have changed? And in listening in this state and in listening in our district in Salem-Keizer, you hear some common themes. One is that we need to have alignment. Two is that we need to have a really strong commitment to best practices. Three is, as Senator George keeps pointing out, you need to have momentum from the bottom, from the grassroots, from the teachers that are doing the work, from the parents who love and care for their children, and some direction and consistency on policy from the top, from the leaders of the state, from the boards of education, et cetera. And when you put in place systems of continuous improvement, you have constant feedback loops, you monitor and you benchmark your progress, not only on student achievement, but on other benchmarks like public satisfaction, input from students, et cetera, then you get a thriving, positive outcome. And I believe that's doable. I believe that it's what we're doing in Salem-Keizer, and I think it's very exciting to think about us doing that at a state level. When I was serving at the first meeting, actually, on the education investment team, the person who really impressed me when I was thinking about the future vision for what we need to have in Oregon is a teacher from Crook County, Michael Giesen. He's a middle school science teacher. And I asked him what teachers were worried about, and he shared with me that they were very concerned about their jobs. They were very concerned about how they could continue supporting their students. And in short, he said, morale is really, really low. He said, let me give you an example of what I think we could be doing in Oregon. And he mentioned a speech that he was able to hear from a minister of education in Finland. And the minister of education said, in Finland, we are very, very proud of our teachers. And we have built our education system on a system of trust. I believe that's what's in this bill. I believe that we can make that happen. Right now, we talk about resources, and there are several things that we're short on. Number one is money. But a lot of the resource that we have that we can use in the next couple of years through these tight times is how we spend our energy and what we focus on. And I firmly believe that this bill will move us in that direction, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thank you.
Chairman Haas and members of the committee, My name is Orcelia Suniga Forbes. I am a member of Governor Kitzhaber's Oregon Education Investment Team and have the privilege of appearing before you today in support of Senate Bill 909. In 2003, five foundations came together and formed Foundations for a Better Oregon to address major issues facing our state. In 2004, we established the Chalkboard Project with a goal of uniting Oregonians to make our public schools among the nation's best. As the Meyer Memorial Trustee, I remain one of the original members of FBL and of the Chalkboard Project. Chalkboard supports the concept of the Oregon Education Investment Board because of the promise of better alignment of Oregon's early childhood, K-12, and post-secondary education goals and outcomes. Oregon's children will be best served by a comprehensive system that offers coordination and collaboration along the path and better accountability for achievement results. We believe that a comprehensive vision and strategy can emerge from a coordinated leadership structure as proposed. We would expect the quality of our education system to improve and to be able to identify efficiencies along the way. The Governor's proposed Education Investment Board, which is subject to Senate confirmation, would develop the overall plans for management, oversight, and funding for your consideration in 2012. It is important, however, to note that while the state provides the investment, it is the local teachers, districts, and stakeholders who must create and implement the system. Senate Bill 909 is not presented in isolation. It is part of a major plan for revising Oregon's education system. Higher education reform is before you, appointment of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, full-day kindergarten, and K-12 efficiency and enhancements are all bills that help make this a bold new approach to making Oregon's entire system of education and learning among the best in the nation. Two other bills align very well with the Investment Board's goal. Senate Bill 252 creates better professional pathways for teachers and supports effective teaching and administrative leadership. Senate Bill 290 will help create better teacher administrative performance assessment tools. I also want to acknowledge that this legislature is looking closely at efficiencies in the system, as you have done with your work on ESDs and transportation funding. To sum up, this session is indeed the session that focuses on education, because we know how critical a well-educated citizenry is for our future. In closing, I would call our attention to an article that appeared in the New York Times on Sunday, Oregon Frontier from Under a Bonnet. It talks about a new film by Kelly Reinhardt, inspired by the pioneers who came to Oregon with Stephen Hall Meek. Ms. Reinhardt is quoted as saying, "Reading the journals, you're like, why did they just keep going? Why didn't they turn back?" The author of the article, Nicholas Ruppel, concludes, "Yet as with a Western, the greatest eloquence can come from the silent expanses of virgin territory that confronts the pioneers at every turn, undiscovered country that presents a glorious but unyielding vision of what's to come. We are embarking on a new adventure, and I submit that we should not turn back, because ahead lies a bright future for Oregon's educational system. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today, and thank you for your service to Oregon."
Senator Haas and committee, my name is Tom Cole, and I'm the executive director of an organization in Medford, Oregon called Kids Unlimited. I was honored to be here, first of all, and I'm excited about the opportunity of hope, because when we first engaged in this conversation with the investment team, I represent a community that's very diverse, a community that has changed drastically in the last 15 years, like many Oregon communities. Our organization has a strong role with the Latino community and advocacy for those kids, and oftentimes those children are at the forefront of discussions in the achievement gap. When we sat last week as an investment team, and I was proud to be a part of it because of the caliber of people who are a part of this discussion, not just highly qualified educators, but people who I think believe in kids. I was excited to drive back and come back to my own community and reflect on how this change as a system would really impact a community like Medford. And one of the passages for me that strikes clear is that we have a young man who just graduated, first person in his family to graduate from high school. His parents had no higher than a second grade education. And he's now at Bowdoin University in Vermont. And the irony was, in discussion of a system, what could change? And I know that Senator George has brought up the innovativeness. We have looked at models like the Harlem model that is a reflection of this 0-20 system, and this young man had a chance to engage in a conversation at a college that probably 10-15 years ago would never imagine attending. And the spirit of that, to me, is about what Senate bill is about. It's about hope. It's about looking at what is right with education, improving upon it, and not giving up that in our own local communities, the things that have worked for organizations like myself has been the connection to private business, the connection to the nonprofit sector, the other variables that play into this larger vision of community engagement, and I'm proud to support this.
Thank you. Sue?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sue Hildick. I'm the president of the Chalkboard Project, and I have only one thing I would like to add. You know, Chalkboard's been deeply engaged in listening to Oregonians for the past 7 years, and we know very strongly that they believe that we should have one of the best education systems in the country as measured by student achievement gain. We believe this bill moves us in that direction, that better coordination will maximize the value we can achieve in that system. So we think this is a step in the right direction and encourage you. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for our panel?
Thanks.
Thank you all. About Nori Juba, Morgan Anderson, and Kevin McCann.
Really strange.
I saw Morgan in here a second ago.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to advocate for what I see as a very broad, bold new step in education. My name is Nori Juba. I'm a member of the business community in Central Oregon and also a member of the Oregon Education Investment Team. You know, despite all the criticism about our education system, we still remain the number one power in this world. And the reason for that is we are the most innovative, efficient system. And so our education must be doing some things right. But at the same time, I believe that our education system is outdated, and it'll continue to put us at a disadvantage. What's propelled us into the number one position, again, as I said, is innovation and efficiency. Every year we see productivity gains in the private sector, but we are not doing the same in education. We're not doing more with less, and I'd rather do more with more, but the reality today is that we have to do more with less. And what we're doing today is what we were doing 20 years ago, what we were doing 30 years ago. And in order to break through this cycle, we need to have innovation. And I want to address Senator George's concern that, you know, somehow this structure or this proposal or this piece of legislation will stifle innovation. And I want to use an analogy of the automotive industry. You know, Ford today does not build the cars the same way, design or build the cars the same way they did 50 years ago. They have different objectives. 50 years ago, they were building muscle cars that could beat any other car in a road race. Today, they're more concerned with gas mileage, environmental impact, safety. So you got different objectives that they're building cars to. At the same time, it takes fewer years to design a new car. It doesn't take 7 years, which is what it took a car maker to come up with a design for a new model. It also takes a lot fewer workers on the factory floor to build that same car today. And the myth about top-down or centralization is that what's happened in the automotive industry is that there's actually the workers are more empowered today on the factory floor. So the decisions are being made
at the factory floor to improve quality, to improve design, to improve efficiency. So what I see is the need for innovation can actually happen within the structure. So what we need is innovation, but at the same time, we need accountability to go with that innovation. And in our school district in Ben Lapine, we have 27 schools, and we have set some very high standards. We have set accountability across all 27 buildings. But at the same time, we're not asking all the buildings to approach teaching and learning in the same way. We recognize that there's different students, different learning styles. So in our four comprehensive high schools, we have a different schedule for each high school. But at the same time, what that does is it allows for innovation, but it holds every school accountable. So I think those two things are possible. We can have a system that's working together, but at the same time has the ability to come up with his own solutions, innovate, and find efficiencies. And I believe that what the governor has proposed here is exactly what this allows. It allows us to improve productivity in the classroom. So not only kids learning more, but they're learning what they need to be learning and learning the way that kids learn today, which is very different than when I was growing up. So again, I just want to conclude by saying thank you. I think this is the step in the right direction. This will foster innovation, improve efficiency, and very important thing is that our teachers in our district have been involved with reform projects like the class project with Chalkboard, and they're very energized. So this is not businesses versus labor. This is not teachers versus management. This is something that we collectively believe is the right for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Norwood. Business, are you in Central Oregon?
I'm a managing director of Ben Capital Partners. We're a private investment firm.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Let's go from Ben Capital to Intel.
I'm actually here today to represent OBA. I'm Morgan Anderson, and I am the chair of OBA's Education Committee, and I'm here to lend support of Senate Bill 909, and we feel that it will improve the lives of Oregon children and their families for a number of reasons. There are three outcomes specifically that this bill addresses that we feel is a very positive step for the state. First of all, it would ensure rigorous, aligned standards at all grade levels, and we know that there's been great strides that have occurred over the last several years in this area, but they're still siloed. And so looking at pre-K, K-12, and higher ed as one system will really help Oregon students advance. Secondly, it will utilize a data system to support students and teachers and to record their progress across the education continuum. You all know that in business, we have to have data to make decisions, and yet we only have part of the picture for our education system. We track important things like test scores, graduation rates, but we don't track how many students who graduate from high school go on to a 2 or 4 year college, their success rate in those, and where the gaps are in their education background to allow them to be fully successful. And so we really strongly believe that this data system will fill a critical gap in our state system. Finally, we believe that the budget system that focuses on the learner and learning outcomes and identifies best practices is a very positive step. This budget system would identify efficiencies and leverage opportunities for higher student achievement. We know that we are able to attract many young students, smart students, educated students to our state to work, but we don't always do the best job in educating those who have already gone through our K-12 system. And in fact, Oregon is now ranked 49th in the nation in college-going rates. This is 2008's data, the most recent data available from the National Center of Higher Education Management Systems. Oregon falls behind only Alaska in getting our kids to go on to a 2 or 4 year college, and we know that once they get there, even fewer graduate. So we have a huge opportunity to get more students to go on to 2 and 4 year schools and to have them succeed in getting their certificate or degrees. OBA and our member companies, including Julia Brim Edwards from Nike, have been working throughout the past year with parents, superintendents, education advocates, and the governor's office to come up with initiatives for meaningful education reform, and we believe this bill is the first step in having much more success for our Oregon students and our families and allowing them to better compete in a global economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin.
Senator Haas, members of the committee, I'm Kevin McCann. I'm the executive director of the Oregon School Boards Association. I'm here today on behalf of our 1,400 locally elected school board members and our board of directors. Our board, which is made up of 21 school board members from around the state, met last weekend, heard an excellent presentation from Nancy Golden and from Duncan Wise about this concept, and I think they want to applaud the governor for his bold approach and trying to re-energize our commitment as Oregonians to education. The things that we discussed, our board discussed, that we concur with is that the governor's assertion that, as you heard today, I heard him say to the education investment team and again to a group of stakeholders on Wednesday, Oregon has seriously underfunded its education system at all levels. And our board was glad to hear that, and we do recognize we're in unusual circumstances financially in this state that cause you as our decision makers to not be in a position to probably give K-12 education and other segments as much as you'd like to. They support the concept of a statewide performance-based budget that leads to a clear understanding of the human investments that we make as a state. We want to be a part of turning lives successfully around and guiding young people. They concur with the statement that Dr. Golden made that under this vision, local control will actually be more important than ever before. And Duncan Wise in his presentation talked about the state's job of procuring educational services and local districts' job of delivering on those services and doing that in a way that really looks at the concept of great internationally benchmarked standards and world-class assessment system that really measures individual student improvement. They believe that a system of education will remove any barrier, or that a new system of education needs to remove any barriers that cause students to stumble along the way. And that's something I think there's been a lot of effort put into over the years, but we clearly as a state need to do much more. And this is really a primary goal of the governor's 0 to 20 system that he talks about. In the public deliberations, I think what I'd like to say is that our in listening to the Education Investment Board and reading this proposal, our board members stand ready to help. They want to make the system better. They want to re-energize the conversation about education in Oregon. And so we stand ready to volunteer and help at the highest levels. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin. Questions for our panel?
Just a quick one.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Morgan, I wanted to ask you about the embarrassing number 49 ranking about the percentage of kids going to college. I think you said that was a 2008.
Yeah, that's the most recent. I used to quote 46 in the nation, which is where we were at the last time the report came out. So we've fallen a few slots.
And the source, I'm sorry, I missed that.
It's the National Center of Higher Education Management Systems.
Thank you.
Senator Fields.
Thank you, Chair Haas. A lot of this discussion has also made me think about a presentation that we've had in the Public Safety Subcommittee in the past by the former Chancellor or President of U of O, Mr. Frommeyer, who showed the correlation between our inverse relationship between prison spending and how much we spend on higher education. So I thought I would use this as an opportunity to underline that we're spending more on our prison system when you look at youth and adults than we are on higher education and community colleges combined. And higher ed and the corrections department definitely pulled from the same pot because it's virtually all general fund. And so as we think about the direction that our state wants to go in, I think we all need to think about whether or not we're comfortable spending more on prisons than we are on higher education.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
David Reeves, Bonnie Luisi, Ken Thrasher. And we're getting close here, so if you guys could present your testimony, we thank you.
Thank you. Chair Haas and Senators, thank you for giving us the opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 909. My name is Ken Thrasher. I am the chairman of COMPLE and the chairman of the Children's Institute, which is a research and policy organization around early childhood. You know, I think that we all recognize this is very difficult work we're taking on here with these reforms, but I think the governor's leadership in making this happen is really important at this point in time, because if we look at the power of efficiency and effectiveness, I think that's what we're all about with some of the changes being proposed. And I think the early work that was done in the Early Childhood and Family Investment Transition Report laid out a really good strategy that needs to be vetted further with the work of the proposed Early Learning Council, which I think can then take that work and expand on its effectiveness around early childhood investments. Because today, we do know we have 12 different programs and 6 different state agencies touching these early childhood investments. So making them more efficient as a delivery system has to be one of the strategic outcomes that we come out with. Because we know that if we connect the dots right into the broader continuum that's being proposed, we can do some significant things in reducing the cycle of poverty we have, teen pregnancy, and some of the criminal and juvenile justice issues we have, which the return on investment is significant in early childhood, as you all know, up to 10 times return on investment when we make those right decisions. So I believe that this approach is the right approach. I'm very much an advocate for it, as is Ready for School, which represents 78 business and other leaders in our state that stand strongly behind these reforms and making sure that we make these critical investments. So thank you for your time.
Senator Haas, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name's David Reeves. I'm president of the American Federation of Teachers Oregon. We represent 12,000 educational professionals in Oregon. I'm here to speak in support of SB 909, and I'd like to be on the record with what we see as the potential functions of such a task force and the limitations of the scope of such a task force. I must respectfully correct the governor. We do not have a broken system of education. I think, as you've heard from everybody who's previously testified before me, within education and without education, nobody's speaking of a broken system. Fragmented, perhaps, competing, not coordinated, but in Oregon, this is not a broken system of education we're referring to. So we really are talking with this task force about the transition between the different systems of education within our public education framework and trying to smooth the way where we can with those transitions. You know, it is important to note that it's not a continual streamlined path from pre-K through graduate school, and I'm particularly speaking in regards to higher education. I think some of the previous people who have testified here seem to be talking about a higher ed system where everybody's completed their higher education, their post-secondary education, by age 26, immediately going in from high school. And that's certainly some students, but that's not a lot of the non-traditional students we're seeing nowadays. We have a lot of people who leave the workforce, come back for retraining, and then enter the workforce again. We have many people who do not pursue their higher education to complete a 2-year or 4-year diploma or certificate. And I just want to point out for on the record that the task force is aware of these limitations as we're looking at the system, particularly of higher education. Another things we have to be aware of in the scope of this commission is some of the remarks I've heard about performance. I think, again, as I said, we don't have a broken system of education. You'll find many teachers, educators are deeply aware of what's going on in their classroom, in the lives of their students, and care deeply about that, and don't just see students there as attending for that hour. They do have curriculums. They do have outcomes. They are working towards those. They do have performance measures. I think the role of such a task force would be to coordinate performance measures and make sure they are aligned. But I'm just worried when I hear talk about brand new performance measures as if there is no accountability in education. And I do want to point that out at this point in the process. We are a little worried that in the amendment bill to SB 909, in referring to the mission of post-secondary education, there's no mention made of research and research institutions. And we just want to remind the committee that that is an important part of post-secondary education this day, particularly our research institutions. We do want to let the committee know and the business community know we really do value the import of the input of the business community in what our education system should be working towards, particularly towards outcomes. We need an educated and skilled workforce. But I just want to make sure we know that when it comes to designing curriculum, pedagogical methods, and assessment methodology of students, we educators are the experts. And the reason I'm saying that is some of these task forces, some of these commissions tend to, you don't see a teacher on them. And I just want to point out, if we start getting teachers on them, they can offer their expertise, what is involved in their profession, and I think we can get a really good, some really good recommendations out of that. Something that actually teachers have buy-in to and feel a part of. I think you've seen with No Child Left Behind, that was a package that really did not get the input of educators and to this day does not really have their support. On the other hand, something like Common Core Curriculum, and it remains to be seen, but it is promising because that did have committees of teachers look at it and make some very big revisions to it. And I think because of that, that's something that actually can be put into practice in the classroom by those on the front line. So I'm just bringing this up today on the record as we're moving forward with some somewhat vague proposals to realign the system of education in this state. We also are worried about when people talk about performance measures. If you look at things like the federal graduation rate formula for post-secondary education, it's extremely flawed. Half of the undergraduates in the systems nowadays nationwide are not included in that formula. So I think as we're talking about outcomes, let's talk to educators about what's involved there and not just look at easy-to-compile numbers like graduation rates, things like that. Funding in post-secondary education, funding based solely on performance of students, is worrisome. American Federation of Teachers has said they're very open to amending the funding formula that currently is enrollment only, and that's not a perfect formula either. But you have to have some kind of balance to ensure access to every resident of this state, that they do have access to public education, and we're not limiting that based on the potential performance of that student. I mean, that's the case with elite institutions.
David, we need you to conclude.
Okay, oh, sorry. So just to wrap up, I just want to remind the committee that investment will mean investment. The last time there was some real investment in higher education was really with the GI Bill in the 50s. The last time there was education and early learning in this country was President Johnson. We've had START. I can't remember the last time there was big investment in elementary and high school. Teachers, American Federation of Teachers, have been involved previously in the Quality Education Commission, Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission. Let's build upon that. Let's keep educators involved, and hopefully we can come out with an improved system of education in this state. Thank you.
Bonnie, we do have your written testimony here.
Right. My name is Bonnie Luisi. I'm the president of Oregon School Employees Association. I represent 21,000 classified support employees who work in the schools, the Head Starts, and the colleges. So this affects us all very much. I came before you today to offer support of the goals of our students, and that which is the basis for Senate Bill 909. We agree with the governor that every child deserves a high quality education, and that it should be seamless, and that we really appreciate the fact that it's child-centered, that this child and his education will be tracked for on. I work in special ed. I work a lot with IEPs. I see that available to the special ed students. I think this is a great thing to do for our regular ed kids. Wouldn't be an IEP per se, but it would be a tracking where we would compare their education and their progress versus the progress of the entire third grade class or the entire last year's third grade class. We also appreciate the governor's willingness to work through a public process and to include us in that. We do have some concerns. Along with David, we don't believe our education system is broken so much as it is underfunded. We understand political reasons why this is, the economy and everything, but the truth is, if you want a high-quality education system for every student in Oregon, it is going to be cost that, and you have to be willing to pay for it. We have to put our money there. The underfunding of our education system, I think, is at lower levels now than ever before, and I think that's one of the biggest barriers we have in education right now. We also have some concerns about the Office of the Governor amassing so much power over the education of the students, and then the additional layer of government that this seems to create. The legislation and school board processes, we feel, are the best, most accountable in providing education, particularly when the system is so dramatically underfunded. You can't pick and choose what students walk in your door. You educate all the students there, whether they are special ed, whether they are TAG, whether they are regular ed, title, secondary language learners. We believe that the most common system in schools, as the Constitution directs, is that it is controlled at the local level. And then our students' education is best when it is planned, controlled, and implemented by those most involved, which would be your parents, educators, school boards, and the community. We also think that the legislative process is the right one for making decisions about uniform education policies and statewide funding. And this Senate bill seems to move virtually all decision-making power to the governor's office, but we do look forward to a great discussion on that and hope that that will happen. We do support the process 909 sets up to highlight the needs of our education system and undermine the changes that are necessary, and to determine the changes that are necessary in order to provide education for our students. And we appreciate being part of that process and look forward to finding real solutions to the real problems we face in providing our students with the education that they deserve. We encourage the committee to closely consider Senate Bill 909 and participate in this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Okay. Questions? Sir George?
I appreciate you took issue with the governor. I just want to kind of take issue with your statement. Here's the perception of the public, okay? Since 1970, adjusted for inflation and weighted per pupil, we spend twice as much money on education today as we did in 1970, which means that adjusted for inflation and per pupil, we're doubled our expenditures. And yet we're not seeing any achievement increase for that. And in fact, when you look at our schools, you know, we have roughly across this country about 180 days of education per year. In Europe, you see 195 days. In Asia, you see 200 days. And they're doing it at a lower cost than we are in almost every one of those factors. Then when you start looking at test scores, the United States has dropped from a pinnacle where we used to be the highest down to, we're still respectable in the developed world, but we're like 25th. So here we are spending exceedingly high amounts of money. The amount of money per student adjusted for inflation has gone up. The results have either been flatlined or we have gone down. And then on top of that, I don't think a lot of parents feel like they're getting bang for their buck, which is why they're going and doing things like private school and they're taking out. So when you say that we don't have a broken system, when you look at from 1970 to today, we're spending twice as much money, we should see increased results. And that's why people feel and perceive the system being broken, because it doesn't seem to matter how much money we put in, we're not getting the results back. And I hope you understand that money hasn't been the answer, because when we've increased the money, that hasn't changed the result. And this is the big thing, I think the frustration is from me sitting on this committee is a lot of people say, well, the only answer is money. And that's clearly not, that's something that we could argue 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, and we tried that, we increased the money. And even if you look at our own budgets here in Oregon, all funds budgets in most schools, and we're not talking about federal spending, we're not talking about state ESDs, we're not talking about state expenditures, you're at about $11,000 per student, all funds, which means in a class of 30 kids, it's costing us $330,000 to educate that kid. I'm trying to figure out at what point would we say that education's off the rails and we got to figure out how to put it back on the rails. When do we make the decision that it's broken? And that's, I guess, sort of my rhetorical response to you. I just think that we need to really take this a lot more seriously, and that would be my takeaway from your testimony.
I think that was more of a comment than a question.
Yeah. I have a response, and maybe another time.
Thank you for your testimony. I apologize to those of you who came to testify. We just are running out of time here. And perhaps we underestimated how many people would sign up, the governor's team, the time it takes. But my pledge is that we will have another public hearing. We will move forward with this. And I do want to keep this moving here in this committee. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 909. And I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 909. Colleagues, for purposes of adopting the Dash 3 amendments, which will help avoid confusion on this issue, should people look up this online, and also for purposes of moving this ball forward even a little bit.
For all the reasons so stated, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 909, dated April 4, 2011.
Senator Morris moves the Dash 3 amendments on Senate Bill 909. Any discussion? Objections? Seeing none, the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 909 are adopted. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 909. And let's go to 560. Okay.
Let's just go ahead and this is a check.
All right. While we're in a work session, let's do some committee business. Go to work session. Let me open up a work session to introduce committee measures. Linda?
We have a legislative draft number 4030 relating to student assessment systems to prohibit the Department of Education from performing certain actions related to the development or use of assessment system unless certain conditions are met.
Okay. Senator Morris, this is just an introduction of a bill. Colleagues?
Mr. Chair, it's hard to believe we're actually at 4,030 bills in this session.
Yeah.
But that be as it may, I move to introduce LC Draft 4030 as a committee bill.
Senator Morris moves LC Draft 4030 to be introduced as a committee bill. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries, and LC Draft 4030 will be introduced as a committee bill. Now, let me open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 560. Administrator Lindholm.
Yes. Senate Bill 560 modifies filing requirements for local school district continuous improvement plans to take effect January 1st, 2013. There is a -1 amendment to Senate Bill 560, and that amendment states that the department may not require school districts to conduct self-evaluations or update local district continuous improvement plans more frequently than biannually. Department may require a school district to file continuous improvement plans periodically, notifies the department of any substantial changes, or update its plan when there has been a substantial change.
Thank you, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Colleagues, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent District 16. This is really a very simple bill. It started with a meeting that I had with the Rainier superintendent, who gave me this document and asked me what happens to it once it gets to the Department of Education, because he'd never heard back after they'd prepared it. And I would submit to you, if this is for the Rainier District, try to picture what Portland looks like, or Beaverton. And so I called the department, and I said, what do you do with these, the continuous improvement plan for the Rainier School District 2010-12? Do you read this? Do you give any feedback? Do you help the department? The answer was no. They pick a couple of them every year and audit them. This is on both sides. They pick a couple a year, they look at them, they maybe make some comments, and that's it. I can't begin to imagine the waste of effort, time, material, to produce a document that isn't looked at. And so the genesis of this bill is simply to say they don't have to do these improvement plans unless there's some substantial change in what they're doing. I don't know who owns the -1 amendments. Is it...
Linda?
I will look at my...
They're not from you, I take it.
Senator not.
Okay.
I do not.
So you're fine with just the regular, just the bill as written?
I am.
Yeah. Questions? Senator Morse?
That's very interesting, Senator. Is there any estimate of the expense to the district to file that? That is a doctoral thesis.
Oh, and then some. It's charts and graphs and no, I did not query the superintendent. And in fact, it's sort of sad. I was afraid to identify the school district coming in here for fear of retaliation from the department. And early on, the superintendent asked not to be identified. We since agreed if we're going to drop a bill, let's be all in. But I simply cannot rationalize why this level of effort for a document that isn't used and apparently provides no meaningful feedback to the districts. And again, this is little bitty Rainier. I don't know what Medford looks like. And the governor just sat in this very chair and talked about a bill that you all are seriously considering to try to eliminate paperwork, to try to eliminate duplication, to try to find efficiencies, to try to do things that are meaningful for the continuum of education. And I would submit to you, this is a doorstop, is not meaningful.
Follow-up question.
Senator Morse? Yes,
sir.
Senator Morse, I will be happy to call the superintendent and find out what they estimate as the cost, if that's useful to advancing this bill.
Thank you. I think it would be would be a value. Of what value is that report to the district? Did you query the superintendent? Did that effort produce results for the district?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, no, it did not. At least in the superficial conversation that I had with the district administrator. To put it in context and in an effort to be fair, this was at a town hall that I was conducting. It's a sort of come one, come all, bring your problems and we'll talk about them. And so it wasn't a forum that led itself to a thoughtful discussion of this. But in my subsequent contacts back to the district where I said the agency doesn't use it, I would presume that the district already knows everything that's in here. This is just a matter of typing, collating, binding, distributing, and all the attendant costs. I don't actually know how valuable this was to the district in terms of amalgamating all the information in one place, but I presume this is a compendium of largely everything they do, and they already know it in pulling this document together.
If I may, another follow-up.
There was,
Mr. Chair. Would this document have in any way any relationship to self-evaluations for accreditation purposes?
I don't know the answer to that. And forgive me for now, that's the trifecta that I didn't have the answer to, but I intend to get back to the committee if you're willing to keep the bill alive. You want the cost, the relationship to self-evaluation with respect to accreditation, and whether or not there was any thoughtful self-analysis in the completion of this document that led to improvements.
Yes, if it makes the pleasure of the chair.
I'm sorry.
I say my request, if it meets the pleasure of the chair, I would appreciate a response from the senator.
I will be more than happy, Mr. Chair, to get this back to the professional staffs for distribution to the committee.
Perfect. You know we're sucker for those props, too.
Well, I was tempted to come and heave this out onto the floor, but I was afraid I would damage our newly renovated building.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson, the way I'm reading this bill, it doesn't say that the school district doesn't have to do this anymore. It just says that they don't have to send a copy to the department. Is that your intent?
Regrettably, because I'm running back and forth between three meetings today, I don't have a copy of the bill. With the idea was that they would do it once, and if there were amendments to it, that those could be done electronically and based only on that section that needs to be redone.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could do a follow-up. I hope we hear from somebody from the districts or from the department. I served on several site councils over the years, and as part of the site council, it's part of the site council responsibility to do a school improvement plan, and it's actually doing the plan that's helpful to the school. I don't know what the department does with it, and it seems like they could be emailed instead of sent in that form, but it's actually the process of going through the steps of looking at all your, you know, where you need to improve and how you're going to get there that's helpful rather than actually putting it into paper. So I'd like to get a little bit more information about what the intent is of.
Mr. Chair, in response to Senator Bonamici, I agree with you. I think thoughtful reflection on how we do things is a valuable exercise. But if there is no give and take between the department and the school district, if there is no meaningful dialogue that results in substantive improvement, in fact, if nobody at the department even reads it, I don't know what the exercise profits, with the exception of the issue raised by Senator Morris, if in the actual execution of the document there's a period of thoughtful introspection that informs a different way of doing things. If this is simply an amalgamation of information on some required form by the department and then it's never reviewed by the department, or I don't want to say never because this one might have been one of the ones that was sporadically pulled, but unless there is a mechanism to have a thoughtful dialogue between the district and the department that leads to some beneficial outcome, I would submit to you that this is just a nice compendium of info about the district. And I don't know if one kid gets a better test score or one cost is reduced or one improvement is found as a result of this exercise. But I would submit to you just the carbon footprint of this puppy alone is bad enough to figure out a smarter, better way to do it.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. And I will be back to the professional staff with the answers to Senator Morris's questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Ruth Murray.
How do I follow that?
It's tough.
Senator Haas, members of the committee, I'm Ruth Murray. I'm president of the Oregon Association of School Libraries. I've been a teacher for 39 years in K-12, and I'm speaking against this Senate bill. I'm here as a representative of school libraries because the last session of the legislature unanimously approved House Bill 2586, and that required the CIP plans to include school library programs. We are concerned that if the reporting to the DOE is not required by districts, they're going to choose not to report.
As I said, I've been an educator for a long time, and I know that districts are stressed right now with time demands. However, I believe that districts would ignore their improvement plans if they aren't required to report. I also want to interject at this time that I've been working with Jan McCoy at the Department of Education on trying to revamp the system of reporting. And recently, they have turned the system into an e-report. I also know that districts have been incorrectly reporting for a while and just taking pages of information and copying them into a form to make their report look more substantial. I really think that before you consider this bill, that you ought to talk to somebody like Jan McCoy at the Department of Education, since I'm not an expert on that area, to find out exactly what is done with the report and how they consider the reports when they're given. Districts need to be continually assessing and reflecting on their own progress in order to stay focused on their priorities. That focus is now more important than ever in the current economic situation. Districts really can't afford to lose sight of their priorities and scatter their resources, which is exactly what happens when they don't assess and reflect on what they're doing. In addition to these concerns, I wonder, isn't the purpose of a CIP to guide and direct the educational direction of a district, to provide a reporting system for accountability of district use of state funds, taxpayer dollars, respond to areas of education the state has deemed important? If districts are still required to do all the work, yet need only self-evaluate, that's a poor reflection of the very best practice we hope happens in our classrooms with our teachers. Feedback allows for instructional direction and growth. Self-evaluation is a good tool, but if it's the only evaluation tool, it's in a vacuum. It can too easily lead to mediocrity, lack of understanding of areas of their expansion. To allow districts to forego the process of a formal evaluative review of their CIP would indicate that such guidance and attention to accountability is no longer valid. Yet the state itself defines that a continuous improvement plan communicates to educators, students, family, business people, and the public the process of measuring and achieving improvements in a school district performance. Planning for continuous improvement leading to increased levels of student achievement requires clearly defined roles and responsibilities for the local school districts. Isn't that still important? It sounds pretty good to me. It would appear that the real reason for this bill is that the process is arduous, and with the new e-tool, is difficult to complete. So we throw the baby out with the bathwater. If the CIP has been a tool to provide for interactive feedback from the state and the districts, and then on to guide the school improvement plans, why, just because the tool has been modified to electronic format and is not working quite right, would it be determined that the original intent is no longer valid? When the calculator has defects, we don't stop doing multiplication. When our circulation system shut down, we don't stop checking out books. Caving to the idea that districts are too busy to complete a CIP implies that it's not a valid tool in the first place. A question I have is this. Why is it helpful for districts if they have to do a CIP but not submit it? There may be some legitimate reason I don't know about, but I suspect a piece of it is that it's not formally reviewed. Districts can lower their expectations or efforts. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Questions? I guess one of the questions is, to what extent is it valuable or is it arduous?
Right.
To the extent that it is valuable, then at what point is that value greater than the costs involved in these cases from Rainier or otherwise? And that's very difficult.
And again, I wish I was an expert on what the DOE does specifically. I do know that I've been working on a committee to simplify the process, and I know districts have been a part of that process. How many they check every year, I don't know. I just don't know the answers to that, but I would hopefully, I hope the committee hopefully speaks to somebody from the department to get those specific answers.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tricia Yates, Ken Hunziker, Lori Wimmer.
Thank you, Chair Haas and members. For the record, I'm Tricia Yates with the Oregon School Boards Association, representing the 1,400 volunteer elected school board leaders in the state. I want to thank Senator Johnson for sponsoring Senate Bill 560. This is another of the products I mentioned to you last month when we came before you talking about mandate relief. Last summer, we initiated the Mandate Relief Project, OSBA, working with our colleagues from OEA, COSA, OSCA, AFT Oregon, and the Department of Education. I hope I haven't left anyone out. We have already had one hearing on Senate Bill 800 that's up again today. This bill is another component, as well as House Bill 3370 on the House side, which talks about requiring a local fiscal impact before you move legislation. So we really do thank Senator Johnson for this. As she mentioned, it came from a superintendent in her district. We've also been asked about it by school boards in her district and elsewhere. This is really a focus on allowing districts to focus on continuous improvement rather than reporting on continuous improvement. It's a paperwork reduction bill. The plan you saw, I didn't really want to heft over the Beaverton continuous improvement plan that I had, but it was hefty to carry. It's also about a 400-page document. So what we're hearing from districts is that, you know, under the law, when you require a local continuous improvement plan, you require a community process. You have stakeholders and you have staff working all together to come up with a plan that talks about their goals, their rigorous curriculum that aligns with state standards, their high-quality instructional programs, their short and long-term professional development plans, policies for a safe educational environment, for family and community engagement, for staff leadership development, high-quality data systems, and a number of other items. So it's a comprehensive plan. They work hard on it. This bill simply says that they don't have to routinely and rotely report to the Department of Education about it. So we think that makes a lot of sense. We urge you to pass 560 along with 800 and look for 3370 should it make it to you from the House side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer representing the Oregon Education Association. Pleased to be a part of the Mandate Relief Task Force that met. And you've heard the rationale for this bill. We're comfortable that this is not about failing to plan the work or work the plan. It's simply not endless paper generation and reporting to someone who, you know, if you throw a ball, you want someone there to catch, and you want to make sure that there's a good rationale for it. And we do believe that there are ways to be creative and clever about reducing unnecessary paperwork and expenditure of time and labor when there's so much more important work to do with such limited resources. And for that reason, we support the bill and hope you will too. Thank you.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wonder if you had a response to the to Ms. Murray, who just testified about how this may change the focus on school library programs. Do you see that that would affect that? I just hope you can respond to her concern.
Chair Haas and Senator Bonamici, we didn't consider that to be a danger at this point. We really believe, that's why I said the remark about planning the work and working the plan, we believe that there are other places in the statute where the continuous improvement plan guides the way schools plan to produce student achievement results and do everything else they do in the enterprise of education. It's why they're there. And we know that they have accountability to their communities, to their parents, to their school boards, and so on and so forth inside each school district, and we believe that that's covered.
Thank you.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anywhere the requirement to report the results of the continuous improvement efforts?
Chair Haas, Senator Morse, it's my understanding that school districts continue to report, but not any more frequently than on a biannual basis. There are some conditions in the dash ones that talk about certain cases in which the department could ask for that, but the work still does continue at the community level. There's required community engagement for the taxpayers and the stakeholders within the community. So I do think that's occurring under conditions as they are currently.
As a follow-up, Mr. Chair, I guess, are the results a part of that report? In other words, if you set a goal and you're working towards that goal, are you making a difference or achieving any of the objectives?
Chair Haas, Senator Morse, it's my understanding that that's what is inherently the continuous improvement process, that they are reporting back on that. I might suggest that you hear from the department on what they've seen over time from these reports, but that's my understanding.
And I guess the follow-up question, Mr. Chair, is that if this statute, and inclusive in this bill, did not exist, would education be any different? That's kind of a rhetorical question. I wasn't asking.
It just kind of hangs there.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have a bill we need to do work session for after this. We do have Cindy Hunt here from the department. Maybe she could clear up some of these questions hanging.
It would be really helpful.
Cindy Hunt, Oregon Department of Education. Yes, I can clear up some of the questions. Chair Haas, in answer to your question about whether or not the continuous improvement plan process is arduous or necessary, it's both, frankly. The continuous improvement plan process and the statute and the bill that you're seeing in front of you constitutes the merger of both state requirements to hold districts accountable and to engage in continuous improvement, but it also satisfies federal requirements for many of our grant programs. So in answer to one of your other questions, where did the Dash 1 amendments come from? They came from the Department of Education. When we saw Senator Johnson's bill, we appreciated her raising the issue because she had the physical copy of the continuous improvement plan, but the other person that testified was also correct that in the last couple of years we're doing it electronically. And so school districts submit these plans electronically to us, and there have been some issues with the electronic system. In the past year, however, ODE has pulled together a group of stakeholders, school district superintendents, to revamp the system. In February of this year, we suspended the submission of the plans to ODE to continue the work of revamping the system, but what we didn't do is to tell the districts that they didn't have to continue doing the process. The reason is the statute doesn't allow us to do that. We introduced the Dash 1 amendments so that Oregon would remain in compliance with federal law and yet give us flexibility so that school districts were not turning in unnecessary paperwork. One of the issues, and I think I've testified before about this general issue in the committee, is this push and pull between Oregon and the federal government, and this is definitely an example of that. The last time that the federal government monitored us on this, they pushed to have school districts do those reports that Senator Johnson had here every year. In our statute, it says every 2 years. We pointed out that the statute said every 2 years. They said, okay, every 2 years is fine. So that's one of the reasons that we are not recommending pulling out altogether from the statute, that these reports are done, you know, that it doesn't have anything in the statute to address the frequency of the reports. So the Dash 1 amendments also state that The reason is that the plans cannot be filed less frequently than biannually. The reason is so that in the next federal monitoring that they do not make Oregon school districts file them more frequently. What we envision is something less than biannually, every 3 years, every 4 years, something like that in our process. But we didn't want to take it completely out of Oregon law because of the federal requirements.
Okay.
The other part about the Dash 1 amendments is to allow districts, or rather to allow the department to require districts to notify us and update their plans when there's been a substantial change. On the back side of my testimony, I've listed some examples of what we would consider a substantial change. These are things like school and district improvement status being changed under federal law. So schools that find themselves under unacceptable or needs improvement, we would expect them to be filing their plans. Changes in student academic achievement, student demographics, school district mergers, those kinds of things would be what we would consider substantial changes. So with the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments, we believe that the federal funds would not be in jeopardy and the amendments would actually save Oregon some dollars in regards to their federal funds, and I believe the fiscal impact on the Dash 1 amendment should reflect that. So if you have any questions.
Thank you for coming up, Cindy. Appreciate you clearing us out up there. Maybe Senator Johnson, you want to respond to that here? Since you're here still.
Thank you. For the record, Betsy Johnson, Senate District 16. I would have absolutely no objection to the Dash 1s. I wouldn't want to put federal funds in jeopardy, and I think that the Dash 1s accomplish that. I'm fine with that.
Okay. Senator Morris?
I don't know. I'm just a guy that's made little rocks out of big rocks. And that's been my whole life. So I don't know a whole lot about education, but I am absolutely convinced that if you have good teachers and you have the right environment that is inclusive of all the resources for the depth and breadth of curriculum, and you have time on task, but all of these bloody reports would amount to ashes. I mean, that's where the action is, and that's where the results are. It seems like we just get wrapped up in a bunch of stuff that doesn't add to the classroom activities, Mr. Chair, so I apologize for spouting off.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond to Senator Morris' comment. I sat in on a couple of the mandate reduction meetings, and I applaud the initiative of the people that called those together. When I asked for a list of the mandates, it's 3 pages long in this little teeny dipe, and you have to ask, does one kid's educational attainment improve as a result of all of these? I started out with one of them, counting the amount of milk that's served. At first, I thought that was ridiculous. Now that I'm the senator from Tillamook County, I got a whole different attitude about how vital those statistics are. But the fact of the matter remains, these mandates are so voluminous. And I was a little harsh in the department in my comments. I don't think the department enjoys poring through these any more than the districts enjoy promulgating them. And in response to the librarian's comments, I can understand that having plans in place is essential. You can't run any enterprise without thoughtful planning and then delivery on the plan. But I just worry about the voluminous amount of reporting that we make our schools do, make our teachers and classified employees prepare, that aren't reviewed in any kind of thoughtful dialogue that results in an unequivocal improvement. And so I just bring you this little tiny piece of what really I think should be a more systemic review of mandates and the amount of time, resources, emotional and psychic energy they consume in preparing them. And I just suggest to you that I'm not sure that even a fraction of them are necessary. And I agree with Senator Morris. It seems pretty simple. This doesn't add much at the end of the day to whether or not we're turning out kids that are prepared to compete in a global economy. And I was inspired listening to the governor's comments about where we need improvement, kids that are ready to go when they hit the front door in the first grade and they graduate without need for remediation. I don't see how doing this kind of a report adds to that outcome. But I'm fine with the Dash 1s.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 560. have two of these bills that I'd like to move, and we have about 2 minutes left. Your committee's pleasure to do them both now or to wait till Thursday?
I think we can do them now. Do we have the paperwork we need?
We have all the paperwork we need. Let's do 800.
To do 800 first, or the ones we're working on?
Either way.
Mm-hmm. We go with 560.
Okay, 560.
Mr. Chair, if
we're going to work session on Senate Bill 560.
Okay. I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 560 dated February 14, 2011.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 560. There's no need for gavel, but go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 22 to the we're getting it out of here. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 560 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 560 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Yeah. Seeing none, Senate Bill 560 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Johnson will be the carrier.
Thank you for your courtesy. Thank you.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 560 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 800. Mr. Morris?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 800 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that the President rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 800 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and asks the President to rescind the subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Senate Bill 800 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a request to the President to rescind the subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Senator Bonamici will be the carrier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, committee. Good work. We are adjourned.